Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
This is Jordan Love, and you're listening to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roster Watch Nation, welcome back to the Epic Roster Watch Podcast, brought to you by RosterWatch.com. And looky, what the cat drug in. Oh my gosh, you see it? Hey, you don't see him as much nowadays. You don't hear him as much on the radio show, man. But no, he's still out there grinding. He's still out there working, of course. Mike Band, one of our oldest, best friends here at Roster Watch, now with Next Gen Stats. Band, how the hell you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, man. I've got a 7-week-old at home. So right now, all my attention is a newborn in my mock draft. Really, it's going to be fun to see what happens on Thursday and throughout the weekend. And like always, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so you can follow him on Twitter, at MBandNFL. And before we get started, Mike, tell him about what you have going on this week. I know with NFL, you've got some articles coming up, sleepers, stuff like that. Tell everybody where they can find it and how they can keep up with making sure that they consume that stuff.
Yeah, so for the sixth year in a row, my mock draft cheat sheet will be released Thursday morning on the draft. It'll be posted on my Twitter account. It's really just, you know, your one-stop shop for everything you need. There's 6 to 8 players per team, usually, you know, just trying to connect player to team. So that will be out Thursday morning. On Wednesday on NFL.com, I've got a day 2 standouts and day 3 hidden gems, according to the analytics. So this uses the NGS draft model, which takes all of their predictive data and tries to predict who's going to be good at the NFL. And so this is attacking and identifying the day 2 players to watch and certainly the day 3 gems.
All right. And as you guys know, Mike has the background in his own scouting, working with the NFL teams and scouting, and now doing the data work after he goes and gets his big fancy degree in analytics and talks at all these big conferences. And man's all grown up, man. He's got a kid now. All this stuff, dude. So
it's great. I was going to say, it's great to see us in where we are. I think it was 13 or 14 years ago, we met at the in the hotel at the Senior Bowl, and I think the match was made in heaven then. And it's been exciting to join you for these mock draft roundups that we do, talking top 10. Really, I was actually doing the math. This will be my 20th consecutive year of making a mock draft. I remember the first one was the 2005 draft. It was inspired because, you know, 2004 happened. I was a Dolphins fan growing up. And I remember someone predicted that we were going to take Vernon Carey before the draft. And I remember wanting Vince Wilfork. Well, we took Vernon Carey over Vince Wilfork. And I thought that the Nostradamus person who predicted Vernon Carey, I wanted to do that guy's job. Fast forward 20 years, and now we're breaking down the 2024 top 10. And to tell you the truth, it's my favorite time of the year.
And you'll be able to see my mock. You'll be able to see Mike's mock. You'll see Cody's mock. All for the huddle report. We got to get those turned in on like Wednesday night or whatever. So Mike has been toward the top of the leaderboard on that thing. You know, ahead of a lot of the big dudes. I noticed that after last year, I move up to number 17 as far as my mock draft scores band. So we got to keep it going this year, brother. Stay up there toward the top of the list for our nerdy mock draft competition. So let's keep it going. We've always talked about how the most important picks, though, are these top 10 picks, because if you get those messed up, the whole rest of the mock gets completely screwed up. You have to build it on a solid foundation. So let's just talk about it from I don't think we need to talk about the first pick, right? Caleb Williams, that's Bears. Been locked in.
Yeah, I think it's you know, it's certainly been locked in since at least the combine. But to tell you the truth, I think across the league, this pick has been in pen for at least a few years now.
it begins to become interesting at pick number two, because this thing has been a just a seesaw after the cockamamie Topgolf explosion with the Commanders, where they bring in all these guys. It felt like there was some kind of maybe a bit of a falling out with Jaden Daniels, who Adam Schefter had really, you know, who has good, clearly has great sources, had said on that Commanders podcast that fans should feel comfortable buying the Jaden Daniels jerseys, stuff like that. Felt like things were pointing towards him. But then on last Friday, we were doing the show on Sirius XM, a draft preview on Sirius XM Fantasy Sports Radio, and live on the air, that thing goes back down to plus 115 for Drake May and Jaden Daniels, to where they, you know, we're like, oh gosh, you know, now are they more interested in Drake May? Turn the page here to this week. You know, we record this 2 days before the draft. On DraftKings, Jaden Daniels is back down to minus 400 there at number two. Just to me, it always felt like a good fit. Cliff Kingsbury, Jaden Daniels. But I wasn't sure if, you know, I wasn't sure if there was something personally there that might have happened. It appears that if there was some kind of kerfuffle, possibly the sports book, like the betting markets, would tell us that they think that it's going to be JD there.
That's exactly right. The betting markets is certainly, they're not going to tell you the truth, but they're going to tell you directionally what's happening. And at minus 400, it'd be hard to fathom that Vegas is opening themselves up to such a swing if Drake May or even JJ McCarthy is the pick. I've got Jaden Daniels here. I did not have Jaden Daniels until more or less recently, you know, but buying into a lot of the things that we can buy into. So one, they bring in Marcus Mariota as their backup quarterback. What does that tell you? Well, a lot of times when a team brings in a backup quarterback, they need their system to fit both the starter and the backup.
That's
so it's very rare for a team to bring in completely different styles of quarterbacks. And when you look at the quarterbacks that Kingsbury's had, you know, certainly Kyler Murray, and even going back to his days with Patrick Mahomes and what he did with a few of these other guys, is that there's mobility factor that really plays into the value of when you've got three wide, four wide running vertical routes, the amount of space underneath that's open with the ability to run is really what can take the top off defenses. So you take deep shots, you can make plays on the ground. I personally would take or would consider Drake May. I'm not in this building or in DC to know some of the off-field stuff, what, you know, how they do in psych tests, how they did at this Topgolf event. To be honest with you, I actually really like the idea of what they did with the Topgolf event. I wouldn't call it cockamamie at all. I'd call it
psychological test,
a psychological alpha test. Certainly it's a, it could be the, what you would call a false or type one error or a false positive where you put too much stock into that test. But overall, I think what came out of that is if you were to take Jaden Daniels, the news about him being disgruntled, not wanting to play at Washington, wanting to play somewhere else, I think that's overblown. I think the media is taking that story, running with it. I think they're interpreting his agent's tweet of, you know, the eyebrow raise to the idea that they've got all four quarterbacks there. I think they work it out. Jaden Daniels is their guy. And really it comes down to who's the hardest player to game plan for on Sunday. Dan Quinn was quoted saying that. I think when it comes down to this quarterback class, Jaden Daniels is that guy.
Okay, so we get to number three, and this is where because here's the thing. At number two, they've said this whole time, from the GM, coach, they plan on staying put. Now, we have Elliot Wolf last week from the Patriots saying, we're open for business. As a bunch of people in the draft world have said, well, of course you're open for business. It's draft day. It's not like you're going to say, don't call my phone. You know, or like, you're not going to do that. Drake May has been connected through lots of ways, be it like the Josh McCown stuff where he, you know, coached him, or the fact that, I forgot what it was that Kevin O'Connell had said, but like Minnesota has been linked to this thing. You know what they did to acquire pick 23 before even sort of knowing who was going to be on the clock, what was going to happen here, how things were going to fall. I feel like you have a more unique I won't get into exactly why, but I feel like you have a more unique perspective about the analytics, how the Vikings use this stuff. You were a big part of, you know, helping bring some of these analytics to some of these teams. What do the analytics say about getting that pick? What you need to do with that pick? Do you think that this could be the spot where the Vikings trade up to three, or do you think the Patriots are just going to say, you know what, forget it, we can do this year with Jacoby Brissett, we can move back to 12, maybe we could get like a Michael Penix or so. I don't know. Like, how do you see this whole thing playing out? It feels like this is where the road splits, and you're gonna have to choose one way or the other to go.
Yeah, this is where I go. The Vikings are trying to move up to three. I know that for not a fact, but from just reading all the tea leaves, connecting dots, Drake May, the connection to McCown, the quote from O'Connell about, you know, footwork can be taught. All those things lead me to believe that Drake May, as the prototype, is their number one guy, beyond Caleb Williams. Now, will New England trade out of the third pick is really the biggest question about will a trade be made. Based off of Robert Kraft's comments on, hey, we need to find a quarterback in this year's class, they're not going to week one with Jacoby Brissett as the only starting quarterback on roster. So I've got Drake May going three here. They stay and pick. It's possible that they have Jaden Daniels rated higher than Drake May. It's even possible that they have J.J. McCarthy in the discussion. But really what it comes down to is, does New England feel like they can move back, acquire two first-round picks this year, perhaps a first-round pick next year, maybe even a third this year? To me, when a quarterback's staring you in the face at number three, you got to take them. You don't trade out of the pick when you need one. And all in all, I believe that Minnesota tries to move up but fails. And 3, 4, and 5 are definitely those trade-up options where you'd expect Minnesota, after acquiring that first round pick, to try to move up for. But in the end, I think New England sticks and picks, and Drake May's their guy at three.
Okay. If that's the case, I mean, I think I might have Minnesota trade up. I don't know. Like, it feels like that's their dude. They've got the ammo to do it. They can do it. They can do it, right?
Let's talk through this okay. Theory. So let's say Minnesota does move up to three. New England drops back to 11, right? Mm-hmm. Or back to 11. Is J.J. McCarthy now on the board for the Patriots? Do they now have to jump the Giants to get McCarthy if they're still looking for a quarterback?
Well, it would be easy to do, because we know that the Chargers probably would like to trade back.
Now, there's definitely – we'll talk about this in a second when we get to Arizona's pick. The idea of trading back and then back up does provide value, especially when the demand for a pick is greater the first time than the second time. Mm-hmm. It means that you can essentially get more in the haul from trading down the first time and trade back up in the second time without having to give up as much that you received. So it's essentially netting you perhaps an extra first round pick while still getting a quarterback that you covet. So if, and this is a big if, New England has J.J. McCarthy ahead of Drake May on the board, I wouldn't be surprised if Minnesota jumps up to three, then New England jumps back up to 4 or 5. I think 5 is what I would guess, with Arizona staying pat, and they end up with J.J. McCarthy at 5. So that would be a major shakeup of the quarterback carousel and where everybody ends up, but it's certainly a possible outcome. With all that said, I still think Drake May is the most likely pick at three to the Patriots.
Okay, so we moved to 4 with the Cardinals. I mean, it was like written in ink that they were going to take Marvin Harrison Jr. here. I mean, clearly they just have all the need in the world. That Michael Wilson is the number one wide receiver on that team, and behind him there is nobody. They need it. You know, they need wide receiver, but we know that Austin Fort, you know, talk about moving down, moving back up, this kind of stuff. I wonder if Minnesota now, whether it was just May that they were willing to use all that extra ammo on, or whether they would for McCarthy, right? I don't know. How do you see it? Like, because look, standing pat and taking Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, one of these guys that, like, it doesn't feel like a consolation. Like that feels like something where it's like, man, this is good. This is what we want to do all the time. We might not have been able to finesse this thing in the exact way that we would have liked to, but you know, with the whole Paris thing last year, right? That was a masterclass. We know that Austin Fort can do it. Move down, then move back up to get his guy. Yeah, I can see something like that happening again. How do you see that coming together?
I can see that happening, but I do think that we might be jumping to last year's example as perhaps too much of a reason that this could happen again. They pick at 27. I think they've got six picks in the top 100. So moving back might not be in Arizona's best interest. And if you've got Marvin Harrison as your number one guy on the board at the receiver position, and an obvious position of need, I think they might stay and pick Marvin Harrison. Now, one argument that says that Arizona might be, hey, in the running for or want to acquire multiple first round picks, you know, Michael Bidwell and the organization, they're not a team that likes to spend a lot of cash, right? So if you're going to build a roster, would it make more sense to have Marvin Harrison one first round pick, or would it make more sense to build to rebuild the roster with multiple first round picks over the multiple years that you don't have to pay that exorbitant number to for much more down the line? So if Arizona is looking to build a future roster, they could be looking to trade down, acquire three first round picks for perhaps the fourth overall pick. But in the end, I think they take the best player available on the board outside the quarterback position and land Marvin Harrison at four.
We have now the so if that's the case, we now have the Chargers sitting on the block, and we know that Joe Ortiz has said that they're – I don't know if he's said publicly that they want to trade down, but it's like all the reporting – they actually have some good reporters out there covering that team that say that trading down would be something that they would be interested in. I feel like they're saying that because if you do believe – man, it's weird, man. Like this thing where we get 21, 22 players at the draft that have been these easy just locks for the mock draft contest, there's only 13 this year. And so it makes it a little bit tougher. The guys who are invited to the actual draft, right, those guys usually all go first round. We have 13. You hear buzz from scouts that there's only 15 first round picks, maybe 16 first round consensus grades in this class, right? I think that if they trade down, they figure we can get one of these true consensus guys if Denver wants to trade up, if the Raiders want to trade up, if Minnesota wants to trade up, right? So I think that they're thinking those would be the optimal trade partners. Keep them in play for one of those guys that's a true consensus blue chip dude before they begin to fall off around 16, 17, or like around where Jacksonville picks, right? I think if they can't find a trade partner, I think in this scenario, I don't know who covets McCarthy enough. Do you have a trade partner you found
let's go through the possibilities of trade partners. So I do agree with you. I do think the Chargers want to move down. I think, you know, certainly it's possible they stick and pick. They could end up with Malik Nabers there if Marvin Harrison goes four.
Joe Alt, dude.
Or Joe Alt. That's certainly what a lot of people think in terms of what Harbaugh said, wanting to beef up that offensive line. But let's say that they feel like they can get one of the second or third tier offensive tackles or second and third ranked offensive tackles a little bit later, and they pass on Alt. Well, if you look at the recruiting profile of J.C. Latham, you see that Harbaugh was a very early offer for him. He was one of the top recruits in the country about 4 years ago. If you look at across the board of all the first round picks, he's one of those that stands out as Harbaugh went after him in high school. So when you put two and three together to make five, you've got Trey Pipkins on the right side, Rashawn Slater on the left side. Trey Pipkins wasn't a bad player. He was a little bit susceptible in pass pro, not a mean streak kind of guy, but they can upgrade at that right tackle position. And when you talk about wanting to get stronger, bigger, heavier, I do think that J.C. Latham could be a name that's higher on the Chargers board than perhaps other teams. And that if they were to move down to 11 with Minnesota, Minnesota moves up to five to J.J. McCarthy. The reason why is because they have to skip the Giants, who are reportedly interested in McCarthy. Then you also have Denver, who's in the running for the fifth pick, who can trade up as well. They just don't have the ammo that Minnesota has, as well as Las Vegas, although I think Las Vegas and their trade-up target would have been Jaden Daniels.
Got the
Antonio Pierce connection to Jaden. So I don't see the Raiders being that team that moves up. So in the end, I do think it's going to come down to Minnesota, Denver, and then the Giants. The Giants are the ones that have the benefit of only having to move up one or two spots. The team that moves down can obviously get away with not having to move down to 11 or 12. And so in the end, I do think that Minnesota covets McCarthy. I think when it comes down to it, O'Connell sees, a competent quarterback between the years, high football IQ, really flashes on tape. I know JJ McCarthy didn't play in this pass heavy offense in Michigan.
Yeah, yeah.
When he put on the tape, he definitely has examples of the plays that the wow plays that make you go, okay, this guy's got it. He's got a good arm, great ball placement, moves well in the pocket, good athlete, reads the field well, played in a pro-style offense, has good footwork, played under center. There's a lot to like about JJ McCarthy relative to all the other quarterbacks in this year's draft. And that's why I think Kevin O'Connell, their quarterback board looks like Drake May 1, JJ McCarthy 2, Jaden Daniels 3. And they're going to move up for a quarterback after moving up to 23, package 11, 23, their third round pick this year and a first round pick next year. And they take JJ McCarthy 5th overall.
So it's a lot for JJ. But hey, man, I think that makes perfect sense. And it gets him ahead of the Giants. So I think if they were staring down the barrel, they would take him. So I do think that that's the right spot.
And you want to know the reason why the Vikings risk future picks for this year's pick. The next year's quarterback class is not as strong as this one. And so if you look ahead, quarterbacks at one position where you always got to look ahead to the next year, the year after, and you say, should I position myself for a pick or quarterback next year? Or should I position myself for a quarterback this year? And when the price is set to move up to the 4th, 5th pick, the only position worth trading up for that provides that value well above what you're trading up for is the quarterback position.
Cody's asking about this, and clearly Ban doesn't have any inside information on this, but it's he's saying, what do you think about the rumor of the NFL forcing Atlanta to flip picks with Minnesota for tampering? Lombardi talked about it, I guess, on his pod or on his VSiN show the other day. This rumor going around X. I didn't know whether that was going to be – they were going to use the use it for this year. But I've never – did New England get an extra pick or what – or who was
– It was the Dolphins ended up forfeiting their first-round pick last year. So what
you're describing – But did anybody get compensation? I just think they take it away.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, they may move him down. I heard that the punishment and the penalty will come this week. Whether or not it's going to affect the 8th overall pick is a very interesting question. I don't think it works like they swap picks as a result of this collusion or as a result of the tampering policy that they violated when they talked to Kirk Cousins ahead of time. So to me, it doesn't seem like that's enough for Minnesota just to flip from 11 to 8. We'll see what happens. We'll see when the NFL comes down with their punishment, but I would not bet on picks being swapped.
It seems like a common sense approach, but there's just not any precedent for it. I don't think you can just do it, even though it feels like it makes sense, as we know with all things in life, right? Okay, so if we then we get to New York, they're crestfallen. But you think if JJ McCarthy falls, they take him, right? I think they do. They got to get something figured out, man. You know, they can't just be Drew Lock and Daniel Jones, right?
The Giants are certainly doing their due diligence on this year's quarterbacks. I've heard, I believe it might have been Peter Schrager who, and correct me if I'm wrong, who might have said that the Giants are doing their homework ahead of time to prepare for future when they do want to take a quarterback, and perhaps receiver is the still the position they're targeting, even if a quarterback's on the board. But I do think that Drake May and JJ McCarthy are candidates for them. I even think Jaden Daniels is on the board too. But in the end, with all three of those quarterbacks off the board, I think this comes down to Malik Nabers and Romo Odunze.
Yes.
I'm going to pencil in Malik Nabers for this exercise. But it would not surprise me if the pick is Romo Odunze over Nabers. And here's a few reasons why. When you talk about what you look for in New York and the Giants, they're a team that's always prioritized character and high and clean off the field profiles. Romo Odunze was an all-academic
He's a great guy, dude. Yeah.
He was a dominant player at Bishop Gorman in Las Vegas. So mm-hmm. He grew up, lives in Las Vegas, right? Doesn't have any off-field concerns. Really, everybody raves about him. And then you look at Nabers' profile. from an hour outside Baton Rouge, a small town, went to LSU, stayed close to home, you know, certainly doesn't have the experience playing in a perhaps a big city like New York. But at the same time, when you compare the two, you look at their track times from high school. Odunze actually had faster times in the 100, 200 yard meter dash than Nabers. So you want to say Nabers is the speed vertical threat. Well, Odunze is just as impressive as a track guy. So when you put all these together, you saw the comments that Malik Nabers said at the combine about the Giants quarterback situation and how they need to get a quarterback if they're going to take me six overall. I'm not going to rule out Malik Nabers to the sixth pick because of that. But at the end, I do think that Rome Odunze is on the board and is in discussion. If you look at all of the odds across DraftKings, across other books, this is where I lean towards. I'm going to pencil in Malik Nabers at number six, although don't be surprised if Rome Odunze is on the board, is their pick.
So with the Giants, I mean, it's minus 225 to be wide receiver. That doesn't help us with Odunze versus Nabers. I think I would take Nabers, but I hadn't thought about the whole Odunze, good guy, been in the big city, never been in trouble, and still awesome, right? That's like it's a pretty good narrative.
And to add one more, they needed an outside perimeter receiver. Their roster is filled with inside slot guys. And so when you look at it, Malik Nabers played a little bit in the slot, played a little bit outside, vertical threat, sort of a little bit in the mold of Jalin Hyatt. But if you look for what they really needed a big-bodied ex-possession receiver who can work at all levels of the field. And Odunze is that guy.
Yeah, well, Odunze can do it all. I mean, he even played in the slot a little bit, but only whenever Jalen McMillan was hurt this year, because McMillan played so much slot for those guys. All right, so that happens. Tennessee runs to the – I mean, we don't even need to discuss what Tennessee does here. They light the thing on fire and run up to the – you know, run up the envelope to get Joe Ault, to some – I mean, you could argue he's the, you know, top of the big board type of guy for a team like this.
Yeah, what do they call it in bingo? A free space when you get
free
one
square.
A free square. That's right.
Yeah,
where we get a point or 3 points on our mock draft when it comes down to the huddle report contest.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's just a lock. If Joe Ault is there, he will be wearing baby powder blue, baby blue. What is that? Light blue, whatever it is. They probably call it something, steel fight blue or something like that. All right, dude, this is where things start to get weird is Atlanta. We start looking at defense, right? And there's all the props about the first defender off the board. I think last I checked, it was still Dallas Turner, but there's all the stuff about Latu. I think so much of it has to do with whether the medicals check out. I don't know if you have insight about medicals, whether whenever you were a scout, if you would have been more worried about a neck fusion than other things like this. To me, I look at it, band, and I just like, man, I know that I think it's too early to go Quinyon Mitchell. He's a real awesome man corner too. We know that Raheem Morris runs a whole ton of, you know, cover three zone stuff, but dude, Byron Murphy to me here, I don't think that would be too big a long shot at all. I think that these next two picks, I feel like with all the steam on Byron Murphy, I've watched him closely at Texas. This is not a homer take to say he's really, really good. And as defensive coaches with these next two picks, defensive head coaches, especially with Atlanta, having made all these skill position picks these last few years, there's been the talk of Michael Penix lately, which doesn't make sense to me. I think Byron Murphy could be in play here. But, of course, edge is where everybody's been talking about since the very beginning. I think that they would be just it'd be like a complete abdication of duty. I think that's the right word, right? To just go with another skill player after you go Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Bijan. They need to go defense, right? I mean, this is the defense spot.
This is the defensive spot. We can more or less expect to see the first defensive player off the board. It's going to be a really interesting decision to see who that is. Mind you, it only takes one team to have the board slightly different than the consensus for a surprise pick to be made. So right now I'm penciling Latu as the eighth overall pick, and this is due to a few rumors I've been hearing about the Atlanta wanting to target Latu, maybe even considering moving back a couple spots to secure him. But when you look at this edge class, nobody's fully clean. Everybody has a little bit of, you know, stuff to them. So when it comes down to Latu's medical report and medical testing, if he comes back healthy and he's a pass and he's, he passes his physicals and medical checks, there's no reason why a team couldn't grade him as the top edge in terms of talent on the board, in terms of what they saw on tape. So when I see, when I compare Latu to Dallas Turner, to Byron Murphy, I do see that Atlanta defense needing an edge rusher. They certainly could look to bring in an interior guy, a Byron Murphy, to come in and play and replace Grady Jarrett as he gets older and ages.
We're having play next to Jarrett for a little while. I mean, you get who's their nose? Is it still Onyemata?
Onyemata, like, that's right.
I mean, gosh, Byron Murphy's hard to pass on, man.
It is. And you heard Daniel Jeremiah talk last week about the plethora, you could say, of blue chip edge rushers across the league. But there's only a very small number of a select few of difference making defensive tackles. So if you believe Byron Murphy can make that impact on the interior, you could see him with the grade up there with Latu and Dallas Turner.
With the Bears next up, so you have Latu going off the board. In this case, they still have Byron Murphy there on the board with Eberflus is it? Yeah, I can't see him passing on the best three technique in the draft. Despite, I don't have their. Let me just pull up. Okay. So I forgot they took Dexter. That was last year. They took him in the second round. So they did use a second round pick on him. But dude, they have Andrew Billing. They have Andrew Billings at nose. They took Zach Pickens last year in the third. I don't know. They might still go edge. I don't know. Like, this is where I get the most pushback, and you're going to have to talk me into this. You have them taking Roma Dunze here. I just don't get it. Because they have DJ Moore. They just got brought in Keenan Allen. They bring in Gerald Everett. I understand the fact it's like, look, we're not going to swindle our next quarterback, Caleb Williams, by not giving him any weapons the same way we do with Justin Fields. We've learned our lesson. I get, but man, just sending him another top 10 wide receiver to me seems like overkill when they have other things they could be addressing. But I mean, clearly it's kind of common. I complain about this pick all the time. Whenever we're talking about it, I'm like, why is everybody sending Rome there? I would hate it for him for fantasy and for redraft. For dynasty, I wouldn't mind it being long-term connected with Caleb Williams, but it feels like year one, there'd be probably be a bit of a target volume issue. But why is it Rome? Like, I mean, you're into it. Why are people so into this?
So remember, they traded a second round pick at the deadline for Montez Sweat. So they invested it and ended up paying Sweat as a premier pass rusher. They certainly could look to bring in another edge rusher on the opposite side. It allows DeMarcus Walker to move inside some and who's, doesn't have the elite get off that you'd expect from one of those top tier pass rushers. So it's certainly a player like Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, Latu are all in play at nine. Like you said, I think Byron Murphy's also in play at nine. But I go Roma Dunze for this reason. Keenan Allen's getting up there in age. I think he's 33, going to go on 34. If you look at TJ Moore's contract, he's got 2 years left. So when you come down to it, you got to plan for the future. So when those contracts roll off the books, who do you have who's next in line? And if you want to help set up your quarterback of the future for the future, you get him as many weapons as you can. You put him in a position to succeed. And so they're going to, I believe, put Caleb in the best position to succeed. I wouldn't rule out an offensive tackle, although they did take Darnell Wright last year in the early first round. A guy like Olu Fashanu, who was actually Caleb Williams' left tackle at Gonzaga in high school. So that could be an interesting connection if, please your quarterback. But in the end, if Roma Dunze is on the board, I think he's got to be the pick just based off of best player available at a position where you can increase the odds of your first pick being a success. Now, don't be surprised if a team like the Colts, the Jets, even perhaps the Saints look to move up into the number eight, number nine spot to take that falling receiver. So that could be interesting. This can also be another trade opportunity, especially with the Bears only having four or five picks in this year's draft.
they, well, gosh, I didn't realize they only have four or five picks. They need, they, I think that's too much of a luxury to take Rome, but hey, dude, it's their team, not mine. All right. So the final one here, this is the last one, right? 10, so 10, 10, 10 to the Jets. Let's just talk about this in two separate ways. Let's say that they don't take Rome and Rome is there. Do you think that they do that? Because they have Mike Williams who plays on the, like, I guess Rome could play. Like I said, he played some in the slot last year. I don't know. You can't, does Mike, you don't have Mike Williams to play in the slot. I don't know what you would do. I'm not sure how much sense it would make. You like the possibility of possibly Brock Bowers. We did have Joe Douglas, and I don't know if you're taking it away from his GM press conference. To me, it seemed like he was dangling bait, saying like there's one all around tight end in this draft, one guy who can do it all. You need a Kittle, you need a Kelsey, you need a Laporta, all this stuff. There's one guy in the draft who can do. It's like he's basically telegraphing. He's like, we're into Bowers. But the one thing that I've said about that, and I forgot who tweeted this, but I was like, man, that is true, is that Todd McShay, who, by the way, I really miss this year. I was talking to Cody about that. It's wild. You realize that McShay is not there anymore around draft time. That he was on one of these Jets podcasts, and they were asking him about whether they would look at Bowers. And like the thing is, he's really good friends with Joe Douglas. And he's like, he kind of shrugged it off. He's like, man, they're not going to take Bowers. You know, like kind of saying something like this. So I'm not sure if I'm reading kind of too much into it. It's clearly a need. What do you think? Could they go wide receiver? Are there other things? Cody and I were talking about our dream would just be to take Quinyon Mitchell here and pair him up with Sauce and just make it the no-fly zone. But what do you think? Like, how do you see this number 10 pick going down?
Yeah, I it will be hard for me to move off of Brock Bowers at 10 to the Jets. And this is more of a short-term decision, you could call it. So after bringing in Tyron Smith in free agency, Morgan Moses in free agency, the Jets have brought in short-term solutions at the offensive tackle position. So they're not forced to take a tackle or one of those tier two tackles at number 10. If they do, I think Talisi Fuaga would be an interesting name to watch, especially a player who I believe Daniel Jeremiah was one of the first players on the Fuaga bandwagon, and you know his connection with Joe Douglas. So mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me if Fuaga was high on their board. But in the end, I think what they're going to look into is how can we help Aaron Rodgers win next year? How can we give him the pieces and really the talent around him to give 2024 a shot. And so with that, even though Tyler Conklin's still on roster, competent tight end in his own right, I do think Brock Bowers is too talented of a player to pass up. Now, what have the Jets and Joe Douglas done in the past few years? They've taken players at positions that don't exactly match the position value expectation. So even though tight end at number 10 is a rich value proposition, meaning that you got to pay him a pretty high cap number relative to the position group, you know, Brock Bowers coming in at number 10, I think he might already be paid like a top 15 tight end. And so that's certainly a talking point as to, is a tight end worth the 10th pick? But you look into, hey, they took Breece Hall in the top of the second round. They've invested in, you know, guards in the first round. So the idea of, yes, we can pass on a premier talent like Brock Bowers just to fill in a hole for the future at tackle. I think really this comes down to how can we help Aaron Rodgers succeed this season? And that player would be Brock Bowers with the 10th pick.